All right. Welcome, everyone. We're on the page. We're on page 14. We're going to start right at the top. In the rabbinic section, it says, well, actually, let's start at the bottom of page 13, the last. It says on the bottom of page 13, the rabbis understood the word yisnav from the word zinav, tail or slowest, as the method by of attack by Amalek, paralleling the attack by Hamas. And now we're on the top of page 14, the rabbinic section, and attacked. According to Ibn Ezra in the rabbinic section, this term, and attacked the hindmost of you, Amalek chased after the Jewish people until we caught up with the slowest moving one. So they would come from behind and they would attack the old people, the slow people, the children, the disabled, etc., the ones who are moving the slowest in the pack or in the group. So who are the slowest moving ones? They are the little children, the elderly, and the women. The Hamas organization targeted their terror attacks against elderly Holocaust survivors, children, and even babies with a similar methodology to the Amalek. These are the three major groups that Hamas targeted in a recent terror attack, just like Amalek. Furthermore, the Baal HaTorim points out that the term "he surprised you" from the verse is equivalent to the numerical value of the word circumcision, the number 85, which is interesting. In a commentary called Birkat Asher on the Torah, we read that Amalek had a unique methodology for fighting their enemies. In Pesikta de Rav Kahana, Zahor, also found in Numbers Rabbah 13:3, asked, what did those of the house of Amalek used to do? They used to cut the genitals off the Israelite male men, cast them upward, and say, is this what you have chosen? Take what you have chosen. What a direct insult and accusation and just disregard for God. But so now you see, when you see stuff like that and hear that idea, what you see is something that is not only lacks God, but is directly against God. And so much so that you would do something, even the most perverse thing you would do, just to, I'm not sure how to even describe it accurately, just absolute disrespect and dishonor to God in an evil way. The Dat Zakanim explains the passage to read, and he, Amalek, cut down the stragglers in the back, to mean that they, Amalek, would cut off the organ that had been circumcised and threw into the air, shouting, this is what you chose, take it. According to our author, this is what the psalmist referred to in Psalm 79:12 when he said, pay our neighbors back sevenfold for the abuse they have flung at you, O Lord. Just like Amalek, Hamas developed and now perfected the methodology of ripping limbs and entrails, page 15, out of the people while alive, you have your mic, babies out of their mother's womb, and so much more. Hamas' appetite for blood is a sign of the spiritual root of the organization. The strategy of Hamas accurately reflects that of Amalek, as the text suggests that Amalek went after all who were stragglers, or in Hebrew, Nechshalim. Who are the Nechshalim? Hizkuni points out that the word Nechshalim is rooted in the word Nechshlashim, or the weakest and the youngest among them. Furthermore, it is written in Seftai Chachamim, that the word Nechshalim is derived from the word, it's probably Chalash, feeble. The Hamas just attacked like Amalek, attacked the youngest, the oldest, and the pregnant women using the demonic tactics of the adversary. The question remains of the incomprehensible success of Hamas is their recent surprise attack. Since all prophecy is cyclical in nature, can we obtain great insight from the very first encounter with Amalek in the wilderness. Can you pick up from there?
How shocking it is that the very first battle that Israel was engaged in with Amalek took place in Rephidim, according to Exodus 17:8, which declares, Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. The reason for the success of Amalek against the Jewish people is rooted in the location of the battle. The Torah itself records that the battle took place in Rephidim. The Baal HaTurim comments that the word Rephidim is rooted in the word Rephah, or shaken. The children of Israel were shaken in their observance of the Torah. Rephah Yadayim, or unstable hands, or Rephidim. What was meant by the Torah's use of the term unstable hands, which represents the same Hebrew word as Rephidim? The Baal HaTurim equated the numerical value of the term with Israel is Rephidim, as equal to their hands let go of the Torah. The thought that somehow the rejection of the Torah opens the door, like a thief at night, to the spiritual force behind Hamas, called Amalek, and Edom, is rather chilling. The place of Rephidim represents the greatest danger for Israel and the Jewish people worldwide in the days ahead. It is the state of being in Rephidim. The Kli Yakar explains it as a stunning spiritual stronghold in the context of Exodus 17:7. The place was named Massah and Meribah because the Israelites quarreled and because they tried Adonai, saying, "Is Adonai present among us or not?" The name of the place the children of Israel reached right before they reached Rephidim was called Meribah, which means dispute or argument in Hebrew. When Israel fights with itself, the spirit of Amalek has an open door to come in, attack, and even destroy Israel. The real Amalek that Israel was fighting was their own inner Amalek. Violence and division among us as Jews not only weaken us, but open the door wide for the ultimate enemy of Israel to be successful in its own spiritual and physical terror attacks, the Kli Yakar comments. As long as the sons of Israel followed God wholly, peace was among them, and Amalek could not harm them. When Amalek saw the children of Israel in Massah and Meribah, they quarreled and fought with each other as all the stops and the camping that preceded the giving of the Torah were full of anger and disagreements. Rashi interpreted Exodus 19:2 and the words, "and because they tested Adonai," to mean that they also quarreled with Adonai. Then Amalek found an open door and the source of their sin. Their nidah, or uncleanness, led to the words, "and Amalek came." In addition, their hands were weakened to add defilement to their defilement, and they could not do anything to resist Amalek. They had no support and salvation by any miracle of God moved away from them, and they also could not help each other as a natural salvation because they were in profound disagreement. This is why this place was named Massah u'Meribah. After their quarrel and their attempt to test God, is there God among us or there is not? Moreover, immediately an Amalek came and fought Israel in Rephidim. The letters of Rephidim are the letters Pridim, and the letters of Rephah Yadayim. One can deduce the two types of Pridim, separated plural, those who departed from God, and those hearts who departed from other hearts. Thus their hands were weakened, Rephah Yadayim. It is why the people had no water in Rephidim, as their hands were seriously weakened, and they neglected the Torah, which is compared to water. Therefore, they lacked actual water. Water was not given to them, but from the rock in Horeb, the place of the giving of the Torah. It is why Amalek is compared to a fly, as it could not harm Israel as long as there was no opening for them. This is the parable meaning, according to which a king fenced a vineyard and said, "Whoever breaks this fence, a dog shall bite him." Meaning that when one breaks the fence, he also makes an opening through which the dog can also enter. Thus, Amalek came and attached itself to Israel because they broke their own fence. Also, Haman, of the seed of Amalek, complained about Israel with the same accusations when he said in Esther 3:8, "There is a nation scattered and separated." That is, they are separated from each other and scattered from the Shekinah. To understand what took place in Israel on October 7th and the success of Amalek, we must understand the battle in Rephidim, or in our case, Gaza. The Hebrew word Rephidim is rooted in the word Pe'erudim.
Well, let's pause right there. Anybody have any thoughts or questions? Yeah. Hey, I get it.
So many places we hear kids especially say, "Oh, well, you know, what I do doesn't affect you."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to do it my way, and it has nothing to do with you. It's like I'm going to go out and do this. But with this understanding, what we do as individuals affects the whole.
Yeah.
Even if we don't think we're that connected, it still is, it gives place for the enemy to attack the larger community.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to notice as we go through here, the vast majority of things that he talks about are rooted in one thing, how you treat other people, how Israel treats itself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talked about this idea, God isn't, he's not surprised when we sin. He's surprised when we do the mitzvot. So this idea of thinking that there's a mentality out there that exists in a lot of the body that says, you know, me and my personal relationship with God, and that's the focus. But from a biblical Jewish standpoint, the focus shouldn't be you and your personal relationship with God. The focus should be, how can I treat God's people based on my relationship with God, what he said to do, what he's told us to do, right? And the biggest reflection of that is how you treat your brother, how you treat someone else. And so it's not only this idea of not hurting someone, but it's also the idea of being a blessing. You know, Jewel talks about talking to people about the idea of doing a mitzvah. And he said, what does that even mean? Why? Because they're all focused on them, on me, 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 and not on I have something to give, to do something for someone else that'll cause them to thank God or to acknowledge God. Totally a different mentality. This comes up today. We're going to talk about this idea of just, you know, the Holy Spirit told me this and told me that, and that's it. So that means I don't have to listen to anybody else. It doesn't matter what you say or what you do, because the Holy Spirit told me, and that's it. And that is prevalent, sadly, in a lot of the body of Messiah. And because of that, we're setting ourselves up. When I say we, I'm talking about believers in America, to have the same kind of thing. A lot of fighting with this group and that group, and the politics, especially in America. Get out of your mind to start fighting about it. Just remove that from your mind. This is exactly what opens up the door for stuff to happen, because it just breeds disrespect even amongst believers. You know, to the point where there's congregations, a lot of them. I would say the vast majority of congregations are largely separated by political parties. And if you're not part of the right party, then you... No. It's like, you know, within the yeshiva and within the Yeah, I know a few congregations who are led by Democrats. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine that? They should be just, everybody should be led by Torah. Oh, socialism. Well, you know what? Look at the scripture has to say about the Jewish people. You'll see it's all socialist connotations to it. But it's not some type of wicked evil. There's always an extreme of whatever you're in that you can take it out of hand and get it to a place where it's not supposed to be. Because surely nobody would say, oh, we're, you know, American, we're capitalist, and then want to see some old man or old lady or a baby or someone who's disabled just on the street living there. Because, you know, look, they didn't do what they needed to do to make money to take care of themselves. How biblical does that sound to you? And even among Christians, among Christianity, what they would say is something to the effect of, is that the Christian thing to do? So there's this understanding that exists out there that no, that's not it. You know, the other side of it is, should someone allow to be rich? Sure, there's nothing wrong with being rich. But the idea of somebody being left behind, it shouldn't be. And usually the ones who are left behind are the ones who are the first ones that the enemy can, when the attack starts, they can get to. And it leaves everybody who had the opportunity to help them in a position where they say, man, I could have helped them, I should have. And again, not to say that we're supposed to go drag every homeless people off the street into our house, not saying that at all. But you understand what I'm saying, as a whole, as a nation, not individuals, as a nation, as a society, if we don't look out for the least among us as a society, then what? Anybody have any thoughts, comments? Yeah.
Kind of regarding the mitzvot, I was thinking about our last parashah with Abraham. Yeah. How the on the third day of his circumcision, he was mm-hmm. looking to be a blessing
right.
on the hardest day.
Yeah.
And the sages talk about how we're to do the mitzvot, you know, to look and seek to be a blessing, because Torah is about what we do, not, yeah. you know, only about what we read.
And it's not about this personal, but it's just me and God. I got this relation. Right. That is just so contrived.
Right. It's about what you do for others.
Yeah.
So it's not individual. It's about the nation.
Exactly.
And another thing I thought about is a lot of these different, I don't want to say self-imposed, mm-hmm. but the newer kind of, you know, oh, I've got anxiety mm-hmm. or other kind of more individualized issues. Mm-hmm. And if things are turned inward, yeah. then you see more of that. But if yeah. there was more of a focus on being a blessing to others, mm-hmm. there's less of that inward focus on everything I'm feeling.
And with that, it's like, this is why the community is so important. There shouldn't be like a lonely person in a community. It shouldn't be, if the community is there to help people, you know. But we see the breakdown of the American family, the lack of community in most of the body. And then a lot of the body who's messianic coming into it, it's foreign because it's not something that we've been raised in or taught, that you have to make a decision to move that direction. And I see you back there, Casey. And one last thing I want to say, what you just said, the sages also said that Abraham was kind of irritated and mad because he couldn't do the mitzvot even on his worst day. Because the idea of doing the mitzvot is that the greater the challenge and the greater the pain it is to carry out the mitzvot, the more merit it actually brings to Israel. You know, and so go ahead, Case.
What is the Kli Yakar?
A Kli Yakar, a commentator. Yeah. Yeah. So
do you have anything more than that?
No, but I can. I can, if you want me to talk to you about some of them, I can.
Because he doesn't have
top of my head.
Like in this, he has like all the list in the back that talks about the different people. So I've never heard of.
Kli Yakar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he goes through some of his stuff quite a bit. I've commented on when I come across things to use of him. You know, like Ibn Ezra, another commentator. There's some of them where they have like the Baal Torim, same kind of thing. there's some of them that you'll hear Rabbi such and such, or they'll have their name like Rashi is Rabbi Shlomo Itzaki. It'll have their, so, but yeah, it's just the Kliyakar is a, the Baal Yom Tov. There's a lot of different commentators over the years. Yeah.
Is there something special about him where he's using this one primarily in this book versus he didn't use it in this one?
Because sometimes not all the commentators commented on everything.
Okay.
And even when they did, some of the comments have more weight than others. That makes so. Yeah, we use Rashi a lot because Rashi, he commented on everything. He's kind of the baseline of, and then people talked about what he had to say, or they had their own commentaries. And so, and you'll even notice in here, they put the term in here, the writer of the book. So basically, Rabbi Shapira believes this. So you could say, you know, Rabbi Shapira quoting, you know, he taught this. So the same kind of thing or understanding. And if I remember right, Kliyakar, a lot of his stuff is in Hebrew too, I believe. Like, who am I thinking about? Like Arbanel. Yeah, well, but some of them have been translated. Some things you get on and they're not translated. They're all in Hebrew. And the sources, yeah.
The Kliyakar is the Shlomo Ephraim Lunshitz. He was...
He's Lithuanian or he's...
From 1550 to 1619, he was a rabbi and Torah commentator, best known for his Torah commentary, Kliyakar. He served as the rabbi of Prague from 1604 to 1619.
So you're going to find a lot of them. You know, so back in Europe around that time frame, there were a lot of them, and they were continuing to do what Jewish rabbis do, talk Torah and discuss things and comment on things and bring insight to things, etc. And so, yeah, that's who he was. A lot of the people that we talk about lived in that time period, in that area, you know, Europe, a lot of them. And a lot of them in the Middle East, too, eventually. You'll see many of in the many of them down there, many of them traveling, and it's, yeah. So hope that answers your question. You can look more into him and see, you can see, even right now in the yeshiva, we're studying through sages and different ones, and there's a lot of them. There's ones who commented on something. There's ones who commented on what they commented on, and their students commented on this. And these two, yeah, so. No, I wouldn't characterize him as such because he's a, but he's a well-respected rabbi of Israel. He's not one of the sages or the students of the sages, but he's, definitely someone to listen to and someone to consider what he had to say. So that being said, where are we at? We're on. Yeah, so let me say this, though. So you see this idea of, you know, shaky hands. It's saying how, you know, are you clinging to the Torah? Have your hands got shaky or have you even just totally just left it? That's a whole nother level. So all the stuff going on in Israel, we see this idea of people who've just totally left Torah. They want nothing to do with it. Then you see the idea of those whose hands are kind of shaky. Is that outside? Okay, I thought I heard a Baron talking. And so, oh, was out of this? Oh, okay. And so these things are, when you have a whole nation, see, again, this isn't about an individual, but it's about the majority of individuals within a nation, right? So you have the majority, whatever happens with the majority pretty much leaves you open to the blessing of God or leaves you open up to the attack of the enemy. Even so, you can see this idea of one moment in during Yom Kippur, the Orthodox, the secular, and the even the homosexual Jews were fighting in Tel Aviv. Fighting, but then weeks later, they're all together. So you have secular Jews fighting, or you know, in the fight against Hamas with Orthodox Jews, in the fight with Hamas against homosexual Jews, because everybody is Israel. all of this stuff that we tend to want to separate, the two extremes, the uber Orthodox on one side and the homosexuals on the other side, all Israel. The covenant was still given to all of them. Whether or not they behave well, this is a big that people don't get and people want to judge and pass judgment on. And I'm not justifying or trying to downplay any of the extreme sinfulness, but not by any means. But when everyone comes together and everyone says, like they did on Sinai, we will do and we will obey, then God can say, or we will do, then we'll understand. Then God can say, you're one, and call them one. And then he can judge them all together as a nation. That makes sense? That's a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing to think, but that's the actual factuals of what happened. There is no more separation like that in Israel. And as long as Israel stays together and everybody starts, you know, Torah is always in the center. And then there's people on the left of Torah and people on the right of Torah. And guess what? If everyone starts looking towards Torah and approaching Torah and coming together, then there is no real right or left like there was, right? Because everybody is coming back to the root of everything, coming back to Torah. And no, the other part is no one's looking and saying they're not inspecting someone else's sin. Now, should people sin? No, they should turn from sin and return to God. They should return from sin and turn to Torah. And when everyone focuses on Torah and what the Torah is meant to change and affect in their own lives and get their eyes off of what somebody else is doing, that's when things change. The other side of this is that if this unity doesn't last, then in some ways they're worse off than they were before when they were fighting, because they had a taste of this and they've turned away from it. So this is why it's so important in America that, you know, Christianity comes into understanding in a deeper level. Why? Because they represent the greatest amount of the biggest group. So whatever they do in mass is going to affect everyone else. But there's always a remnant who has a better understanding of the truth. Not that we walk in things perfectly, but we have a better understanding. And what are we doing? We're actually turned towards Torah and going towards it. We're not denying it or going against it. You know, we're dealing with a lot of people who you say Torah and they laugh. And these are believers because they don't get it. They haven't got understanding what it means. So I'm careful to even tell people anymore because I leave them in a worse situation than they were in. But on the other hand, you can't just not say anything. When someone asks you a question, you have to answer. Or then you answer, God, why didn't you answer? You had a chance. I gave you a window of opportunity. I was on the phone with someone at my mom's house. They called to speak to my mom. I was on the phone with them for almost 3 hours. I just walked into the room with on my mom's phone and talked to them because they wanted to talk and had questions. We just talked. And every time I talk to them, they get a little more. I'm able to get a little more into them. That, and then they even quoted something I said to them before that they didn't know where they heard it from. And I said, oh, I told you that. And so I'm not to be like it was me, but just so you understand that now I said something a while back and now you're quoting it. So something is happening inside where you're getting it. And I'm just quoting to what the rabbis had to say about things. It didn't originate in me. I was just parroting what the rabbis had to say, the understanding. But we have to keep on going, guys, because now we're this little remnant with this tiny little book in our hand. And look around. Look what we represent. Who else around here is? Nobody. And then you have half the church, sadly, is actually coming out against Israel. Vehemently and evilly. And then probably, I would estimate that maybe 5%. Of the churches, not the people, not the individual Christians, but the churches are with Israel. And the rest of them are not. They're either totally against Israel or they're neutral and there is no place for neutral. You know, you put a pot of water on the stove, you don't turn it on, that's neutral for you. does nothing but sit there, and it'll change temperature just a little bit, eat one way or another based on whatever's going on around it, but that's it. It's never cooked. It never comes to a boil and never freezes either. It's just there. Useless. It's not good for ice for a cold drink. It's not good to make a pot of pasta to boil it in. It does nothing. This is what's going on. You know, Rabbi, they called 100 congregations. It looks like one of them is saying, oh, well, you know, maybe you can come and talk, and maybe we want to. So that's, and when that happens, then you get to what Yeshua said. Well, hey, if you go and you tell them and they reject you, or they don't, and not only just reject you, but they don't receive you in and welcome you in as a guest. Then he said, turn, just kick the dust off your feet and turn around and go somewhere else. And then they leave themselves open up for judgment. Because now what have they done? They have just put themselves in the... Every nation we see when Israel is going to the promised land, they had to end up... You tell me the ones who lived peacefully with them were the ones that joined them. Remember the Gershonites? They joined... Or the... not the Gershonites. They did the tents. The ones who carried the water, carried the water and cut the wood. They lied. No, they lied to Israel. Israel saw they lied and called them on it, but Israel invited them in because they were, in effect, they weren't trying to kill them. And they said, you can come in and live amongst us. I can't, huh? Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to remember the name of them. The point I'm trying to make to you is, you're either with Israel and you live amongst them peacefully, and or you're in part of them, or you're against Israel. You know, you're either you go from being a goy, one from the nations, to a ger, a sojourner, to Am Israel, to where you are Israel. What a path. What a path to walk. Anybody have any thoughts, questions, comments? Let's keep on going through here. So to, again, page 19, to understand what took place in Israel on October 7th and the success of Amalek, we must understand the battle in Rephidim, or in our case, Gaza. The Hebrew word Rephidim is rooted in the word Peordim, Peordim. Rephidim is unstable. Prudim is division. Page 20, again, as stated by the Kliyakar, the separation and division among the Jews gave Hamas spiritual legitimacy to enter the camp and create another Holocaust-like event. The prophet Ezekiel prophesied about these days. Remember what happened to Job? Remember that an accusation was brought against him, and in effect, Satan had the right to go and basically ruin his life and destroy everything. He was given that right and given the okay by God. There are spiritual, for lack of a better word, dynamics at place that work, regardless of whether you think something or not, or regardless whether you think you're actively participating or whatever you are. If you're not doing the mitzvot, then you're, and if you're replacing not doing the mitzvot with absolute hatred, that's a huge, with sinat hinom, baseless hatred. That's the way, that's the other extreme. And you leave yourself open for this exact type of thing. The prophet Ezekiel prophesied about these days when he declared, and I sought someone among them to repair the wall or to stand in the breach before me, on behalf of this land, that I might not destroy it, but I found none. The Radak explains that the wicked will come through the fence to return Israel to the ways of God before the destroyer comes through the gate. The fence of Israel was spiritually broken long ago within the state of Israel through the spirit of Amalek that was within the Jewish people who turned against each other. The Or Haim, explains the words, Amalek came and fought with Israel with simplicity and clarity. God punished the people for neglecting the Torah, which is compared to fire and water. See Jeremiah 23:29. Behold, my word is like fire. The fiery sword and the thirst for water were the punishments that fit the crime. While it's cruel to think that the attack of Gaza was brought upon us because our lack of love towards each other and failure to fulfill love your neighbors as ourselves, it's important to remember that God requires Israel to be a nation set apart. As a conflict started, some wanted to single out the Buddha statue erected during the Nature Festival of the youth as a culprit for this tragedy among the Jewish people, as the cause for this tragedy. The leading rabbis of Israel were the first to point this out, declaring, "God forbid." A leading rabbi in Israel explained, "The Buddha statue is not the reason for this attack. We who wear kippot in our heads yet curse others. We have committed more severe crimes than any secular Jew with our basis hatred. We who represent the Torah and our lack of love are responsible." Well, this is a leading rabbi of Israel said this. Go ahead.
We always want to blame someone else.
Find someone to blame.
Rather than look to ourselves and see what have we done wrong.
Yeah.
I think in some situations it is so difficult because you have personal issues to resolve to where you walk in peace.
Yeah.
And you're not walking in criticism, hatred, whatever the case may be. And, you know, family splits, relationships with others. And it's just, at the time, it just seems so much more satisfying to speak evil rather than resolve the issues in your own heart.
Absolutely.
And speak good.
Part of the conversation I had with the person I was staying for almost 3 hours, we talked about this idea, and you know, Avodah Zarah, idol worship, right, has been around since the beginning, and it plagues Judaism. It also plagues Christianity, which people don't want to hear and understand. It's a huge thing. You know, they would say this about this this Buddha statue, but no one's saying about all the thousands of Christians who are rushing to see Taylor Swift at her concert and see all the things that go on there. No one. I remember in a church we were at, there was a production of Wicked. You know, oh my gosh, Wicked is playing in Los Angeles at the theaters. You know, it's the Wicked Witch of the West. Ooh. And you have nice Christian folks going there dressed as the Wicked Witch of the West going to see this thing and putting that kind of stuff on Facebook. But then want to look at Israel or somebody else and say, look, see? You know? Or just this last week, most churches had something. Many of them had they're celebrating Halloween. Well, what do you mean they're celebrating Halloween? Well, they've got all their Halloween stuff. They're doing everything except the only thing we're not going to do is wear something, an evil costume. But the idea of dressing up on Halloween is connected to the idea of tricking spirits into doing something that you want, that kind of thing. And everybody has it. See, here's the thing about it. Everybody has to deal with their own yetzer hara, their own evil inclination. It's there. Whether you think it's so or not, it's there. But if you're going to take something, if you're not going to make a stand and say this is evil, we're not going to do it, then, and you want to kind of go and kind of halfway do it and then get kids involved and say do the exact same things, except instead of dance, you know, dressing up as a little demon, you dress up as an angel, so that makes it okay. You're missing the whole plot, because this is exactly what and you know, a lot of people, you know, is it fun to go out and get candy and get together? And yeah, sure. I'm not saying it's not. There's a lot of things that are fun that we probably shouldn't do or shouldn't do. That's the whole problem. If it wasn't fun and you didn't like it, then guess what? You wouldn't be doing it. So this whole idea of pointing at the same time, people are just, as a group, as a nation, involved in just wickedness, Avodah Zarah. This is what caused the whole first temple to fall, right? But later on, we see the second temple fell because of what? Because of baseless hatred. We're back to this again. But thank God you have this leading rabbi in Israel, and I guarantee he's not publicly messianic. He said the Buddha statue is not the reason for this attack. We who are wear kippot in our heads yet curse others have committed more severe crimes than any secular Jew with our baseless hatred. We who represent the Torah and our lack of love are responsible. And it's very interesting because a lot of Buddhists were the first one to die when this thing broke out. At the kibbutz, they're working, minding their own business, and dead. Living amongst Israel. Doing good. Dead, yeah. Yeah, but they're Buddhists. That's what, that's pretty much the one of the religions of where they came. And when I say Buddhist, I mean that, and that's not, I'm not limiting it to that, just Eastern religion. Where there's flat out idolatry and little idols. Yet they were working to be a blessing to Israel. You just see all this stuff that people want to make some big old deal about, and that's it. Again, I'm not saying go and do that, but quit getting your eye off of stuff and just judging people, like, you know. And I get so sick of that, dealing with, and this stuff is sadly, it's among Christianity big time, because that's what leaders have taught. Not the Christians are bad. The Christians are wonderful. They're people like we are. But leadership has just taught people to, oh, look, let's divide about that. Or divide about stupid issues. That causes the gates to be open for the Hamas to come in effect from outside of time and space and manifest within time and space in a little window of time. And it won't stop until something's done about that. I get so tired. I think one of the hardest things in my job is that there's so many people, 99% of people I talk to, who have questions are, you know, Christians. And they, when they ask questions, I know what they're thinking and I know where they're going with. And it's like it just takes so long to try and get them to unthink. Because some of the things they say initially, just right off the bat, is like, you don't realize what you're saying right there, and you're causing damage to yourself. That's disrespectful to, in many ways, to God's creation, because you think that you're a Christian, so you're better than someone else. And then because of that, you look down upon them. When it's the exact opposite. Because you know Messiah, not only should you not look down upon those people, but you're incumbent to go and actually help them and love them, even if they stay in the sin for a while. What about that? What about trying to help someone? So it's a case of we have to just keep on going and keep on trying to do things a little at a time. You know, I have a friend of mine who for years I've been mentioning to them about a particular rabbi that I followed for years that I've told you guys about. And it's been like in one ear, out the other. Now they're all excited because they're going there. And so they, you know, asked him about me and brought my name up and all this kind of stuff. We're at a place now where people are going to ask questions. People who don't know anything will start asking questions. People who know a little bit will ask questions. People who know a whole lot will say, man, it's time to change. This spiritual situation we're in now, outside time and space, it's moving. You know, most of you live, most of people, we live the vast majority of our life within time and space. But at the same time, part of us is living outside of time and space. Which is a crazy thing. And we're connected to God outside of time and space. We'll get into that one day. Why am I saying that? Because we have a different connection than other people with understanding that God can give us that he can't give other people directly to share with anybody. And because of that, we're going to be put in some unique, awkward positions where we have to respond right. Not in being perfect, but in being willing to be used to speak the truth and tell people the truth. Because there's not enough. not enough. Remember we talked about last week this idea of being filled with the Spirit, and what the rabbis have taught is this idea of someone who has the light of God and will light someone else with it. And when they do that, it doesn't cause them to be diminished. It just adds more light. And if everyone is that shamash candle that lights, then everything gets lit up. But if we hide our light underneath the bushel, then nothing does. And everything remains in darkness. And all it takes is one little light. Yeah, I remember in the Meshuggah Nutcracker, the little matchstick, so small and so humble. In the darkness, you enchant us. And the lady comes in your flame. She comes in there and just, but that little thing, that a little matchstick. This is basically what we're dealing with right now, is how much are we going to let our light shine? How much are we going to come against the of Hamas and let it be known? And sadly, we have to re-educate a lot of people who just have no idea. They've been just totally sold a bill of goods as a bunch of lies. That being said, we're going to stop right here. We'll pick up on the middle of page 21 when we start next week.